for a half a year now, we've been having classes on the Jewish home. And a few weeks ago, we paused to have a few classes on dating. And now we're going to return to our regular classes on the Jewish home. We had broken up our classes into two. The first half of the class, we would read from Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov's book on the Jewish home, Ishu Beito, which anyone wants to purchase can purchase in the stores. They have it, Feldman Publishing, Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov, the Jew in his home. And we spend the first half of the class reading it and expanding a little bit on what he said. And the second half of the class, we discuss practical examples and practical applications without the text. Now, before we begin our second round or third round, whatever this is, I'd like to do what we did every other time, that is ask you which topics you want us to cover. Are there any topics specifically that you want us to cover this semester about the Jewish home? I'll tell you a little bit of what I'm thinking we should cover, and you'll tell me if there are things you want to add or expand on. There's one question that was asked that I don't think we got to deal with, which is dealing with extended family, in-laws, brother-in-laws, sister-in-laws, dealing with extended family. Developing a relationship, what's a proper relationship? I didn't hear that. So that we also have to deal with, dealing with less religious family members. We're going to want to deal with the place of mutual responsibility and at the same time giving each person freedom, meaning you want your wife to keep kosher, but you can't be looking over her shoulder. She wants you to wake up on time for minyan, but she can't be looking over your shoulder. So how do we balance that in a relationship? Mutual respect. What's considered modest and proper expressions of love between a couple outside the home and inside the home. I want us to deal more this semester with chinuch issues, issues of raising the children, and how that works as far as the relationship between the couples, the responsibilities and the breakup of responsibilities, and important tips on that. And that's basically more or less the topics I'm thinking of so far. I'm open to hear from you which topics you want us to cover. Yeah? Step there. Step down. I'm not sure what you mean with regard to this class. Meaning, I could hear where this. I'm not sure I hear where that fits into this class. It's important.
Well, it has to do with the home.
Okay, we'll see.
I'm not sure if you're speaking about the same point I'd like to bring up, but since most of us are about Tshuva, a lot of it comes from Luther. Sometimes we have to deal with family members that are not religious.
Mm-hmm.
And in dealing with those, there's a number of different issues. Lots of different issues. Dealing with one respect to parents who are not religious. I've dealt with it before.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
There's Shalom Habayit issues, and there's just everything that has to do with coming from a being
different than we were in Israel, you know what I mean? Having a non-religious family member still a part of our lives, basically,
although possibly a little bit. That was about what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, could you explain more what you were talking about? Because I didn't get. Well, the step-parents kind of help in the beginning. What status do they have in the beginning to you as a, or depending on who you are in the family?
Okay. that you had to your family, okay. I got the better. Okay. Let's begin with Rabbi Elkitov, and you're welcome to bring up more points as the classes go on. Tell me which point you want us to deal with. You tell me in front of the class, you tell me outside the class, and we'll try to deal with them. Nesim Shalom B'toch B'ito. We had left off discussing the concept of peace in the Jewish home, Shalom Bait. The Medrash says, Kol HaMesim Shalom B'toch B'ito, whoever places peace within his home. Notice that peace is a concept that we say you have to put in, you have to implement. It's not natural. People think, if I marry the right person, then of course there'll be peace between us. And it's not that way. We say that peace is godly. Peace is something that has to be implemented. So one who places peace within his home, then the verse treats it as though he made peace within the Jewish people, al kol echad v'echad, for each and every Jew. And anyone who places jealousy and competition within his home, it's as though he places competition and jealousy within the Jewish people, for every person is like a king within his own home. And this is very, very important concept. Sometimes we think, this is my house. What does it affect someone else? And in Judaism, we don't view things that way. We say that our actions have ripple effects. And the Jewish home is a microcosm of the Jewish people. And every person has a responsibility to make that home to be a source of goodwill and good feeling. And that's something that requires investment. And we see here a few of the things that can cause the goodwill to leave a home. Jealousy. One would think that shouldn't be in a home. It doesn't work that way. Whatever we value could be a source of jealousy. In the service of Hashem, we could have one spouse feeling, why is it that my spouse is much better than I? A person can be jealous. We find that between Rachel and Leah that existed, and our sages interpreted it positively. But it could definitely exist in a home, even between a husband and wife. And competition. It's not uncommon that a husband won't want his wife to be earning more than him. Even though you think they'd be living better. But we know that what matters more to men than money is honor. That's an example, but there are many examples where competition and jealousy could enter a home, and they are one of the things which will drive out peace from the home. And the Medrash is teaching us we have to recognize that we are kings in our homes. So there are some guys that will enjoy hearing that. Sure, I'm king in the home. Whatever I say goes. We know that Judaism presents us with different concepts of what is a king. Whenever a person is given authority, then that authority represents responsibility. If you're given the authority to decide, that means you have the responsibility to make the decision that's best for everyone. If there are aspects where the husband is given more authority in the Jewish home, which needs to be discussed, then that means he's the one that's responsible to ensure the good of everyone else. Responsibility is the source of authority. If you can be responsible enough to do what's good for your wife and the family, then you'll be entrusted with that decision. When we say everyone is a king within his home, doesn't mean that everyone has to bow to his will, but rather that he's the one that's responsible for the well-being of everyone else in that home. Where is the main place for peace? And when is the main hour for peace? I would say, Saveli Alkitov says, within a person's home, between him and the people that are close to him, that's the main place for peace. And what hour is the time for peace? That's the hour when there are many reasons to argue, when a person has anger piling up in his heart. Azri Kal Shato, that's the main hour for peace. Lemakomze, for this place within the home. Ul Sha'azon, for this hour. Yuchedet Ha'azhava Hachzek Bashalom. For that hour, we have the special warning, hold on to peace. Think about Friday afternoon in the average Jewish home. Doesn't matter if it's the winter or the summer. there's pressure. The peace of Shabbos is about to enter the home, and we have the Yetzer Hara, the last thing he wants to see. So he ensures that there's a lot of pressure. Take the afternoon before your bar mitzvahs. Any of you remember it? How many people walk into the bar mitzvah with real smiles on their face, and how many people walk in after a ton of yelling in the house? Anytime there's a pressured event coming up, so or timed event, there's going to be pressure. About that hour, we have the warning, hold on to peace. And remember, guys, you're kings. Your responsibility. You have to start, and you have to ensure that the tones go down. So if your wife yelled at you, it doesn't mean she yelled back. It means that you're the one that's supposed to bring down the tones of voice. That's your responsibility. She's got her responsibility, but I'm not talking to her. Those females in our audience, just interpret this all to female terms. We tell a person, if you really love peace, then you have to know what are the stumbling blocks of peace. And you have to learn how to save yourself from them. And that's something which we learn. And that's one of the concepts which we've discussed many times, that just like a person isn't born knowing how to walk, so too a person doesn't enter marriage knowing how to build a good home. We have this class, we try to prepare, but at the end of the day, we learn as we go along. And it's nothing to be scared of. A good home is something that gets built with time. We learn, but we should learn from our mistakes. It's difficult to always hold on to peace, but it's even more difficult to always hold on to peace within the home. When we want to run away from an argument with the world, that's not too hard. We could run back to our house. You want to run away from someone who's chasing you, you walk into your house, and you could avoid arguing with them. But to avoid argument within the walls, the confines of a home, that's seven times as hard. Because if inside the home someone's getting on your nerves, you've got nowhere to run. Now, notice, this is a male concept, to run. We're going to discuss it in the second half of our class. Men want to run away. Give me my space. If you love peace and you seek peace, then a person should put his eye, put his heart to recognize what are the stumbling blocks of peace, what are the things that are ambushing the peace, and then a person will be able to overcome, not to stumble through them and not to fall in their net. The pasuk describes Mordechai in the end of the Megillah that he was dover shalom nechol zaro. He would speak peace to all of his offspring. So the Ibn Ezra explains, he says, he'd speak peacefully to his offspring, to their sons, to the grandsons. And ordinarily in the world, the sons have a certain element of fear from their father. And Mordechai was such a peaceful guy that even to his sons, he'd speak peacefully. And certainly to everyone outside the house. Meaning, if you could speak nicely and calmly to your son, after you just made on the floor, or after you just scratched up your favorite CD collection, certainly you're going to be able to speak peacefully to the people who are outside the house. The greatness of peace within the home, we see even Mordechai. The great Mordechai was the head of the Jewish Sanhedrin, saved all the Jewish people. He was second in command over the Persian Empire, the greatest Jew that almost all the Jews loved. He'd seek good for his Jewish people, save the day, and the whole story is firm. Yet how does the Megillah end? What praise does it give Mordechai? It says that he was a peaceful person in his home. We see that after all those things, he could be the head of the Sanhedrin, save the Jewish people, second in command, top Jew, loved by the Jewish people, and he's not complete until we recognize that he speaks peacefully in his home to his family. You have a person that one son does what he wants, and another son's rebellious. You have a person that his sons do what he wants, and his grandsons don't do what he wants. Those who do what he wants, so he is more fond of them. And to them he speaks peacefully. Those who don't do what he wants, so he chastises them. He doesn't speak peacefully to them. But Mordechai the Tzaddik, the pasuk stresses, is not that way. He'd speak peacefully to all of his offspring. Because this is the trait that's weighed against all other traits. And if he was praised with this trait, it's as though he was praised with all this. That's why this is the trait that the pasuk ends with. This is the great trait of Mordechai. This is the last words of the Megillah. Megillah Esther ends with this. So Vel Shalom Nechol Zavo. That's the end of the Megillah. That he would speak peacefully to his offspring. That's the greatness of Mordechai. That's, we've capped it off. Sometimes when it comes to religious issues, so especially a person who does tshuva, could be a little bit nervous about them. And we set a few rules here about Baalei Tshuva. Said a ger, about a person who does tshuva, should know that you have to adopt certain leniencies in order to be calm in life. Said if it's a hechsher, that's an orthodox hechsher, eat it. So at this stage of the game, person shouldn't start thinking, well, this rabbanot isn't good, this rabbanot is good. It's got a hechsher, eat it. An orthodox hechsher, obviously. The Gemara teaches us, Kol ha-matile ma'itera b'toch b'ito, whoever puts too much pressure, too much fear in his home, sof u'ba lidei shalosh avirot. Ultimately, he's going to come to three sins. Giloy arayot, living with improper women, shpichut damim, murder, and chilul Shabbos. When does a person make fights in his house? When he sees things aren't going the way they should. What does he see? He sees that his wife bought a hechsher he doesn't want in the house. He says, honey, what's this? Wait a second, why don't you speak with such a tone of voice? What right do you have to speak that way to your wife? She went out and bought it. A person thinks, I'll correct something small. I'll react to something small. And really, in reacting to that small thing, he's introducing into the home something that's much worse. He's bringing into the home pressure. He's bringing into the home fights, and that's much worse. So Shlomo Zalman Orbach is quoted as having said, I don't know if it's true, that parents who take on too many stringencies are doing something wrong. Said, let's say you take on a stringency that you don't eat a certain food. And your son, he goes to his Rebbe's house and he sees the Rebbe eats that food. So he grew up in his house that's not kosher. So now he looks at the Rebbe and he says, he eats non-kosher. What's going on here? So now your son will have a problem honoring the person who's supposed to transmit him the Torah. So if Shlomo Zalman Orbach said, you have to value more the view he has of his Rebbe, the one who's going to transmit him all of the Torah, then that small stringency which you introduce into your house. He said, sometimes too many stringencies can contradict the chinuch that you want to give your child. Same thing over here. A person can sometimes think, well, I want to ensure this doesn't happen again. That's not the way to do it. A person does have a responsibility to ensure that nothing bad enters his house, but he's more responsible to ensure that there's no machlokas in the house. If you could attain both, good. You cannot attain both, so then a person has to give the proper value to Shalom Bayis. The person strives for Shalom Bayis, then he'll attain the other things as well. Usually we think, if I want to get something, I got to go head on, and usually it's the other way around. If you ensure that the relationship is the way it should be, then you get the other things. As the Rambam says, treat your wife like a queen, she'll ultimately treat you like a king. Most people go about the other way around. I'm the king. Yeah, there's a saying that says every great man has a woman behind him rolling her eyes. So that's very often the way it goes. If you want, it shouldn't be that way, then one has to give her the honor. If a person feels like he could forego having peace in the house for something else, ultimately he won't get either thing. He won't have the peace, he really will forego the peace, but he won't get the other thing he wanted. A person makes his house into perdition and he ensures that there's a lot of anger and ill will between him and the people of his home and between them and themselves. People are upset in the house because of the machlokas. Very often we don't want to give in. And usually if we give in, we get more than if we don't give in. What a person wanted to attain, usually he won't attain. And what he had until now, he lost. But if a person puts his first priority, Shalom Bayis, if the first priority is to have goodwill, to have peace in the home, and that's the first priority in the house, then the house is Gan Eden. Because firstly, there's goodwill in the house. There's calm, there's a feeling of security between him and the people of his house, and the peace that's between them protects everything else. So that even if there's a small opening, a small break in the peace, we can close it right away. And peace has a way of sealing off all the other problems. And the lack of peace has a way of flaming up every other problem. We also have to remember, and this is how we started off our class in the Anabayit, that our responsibilities to have a good home are not just between us and our wife. They're a responsibility to our children as well. The one who suffers most when there isn't peace in the home are the children. Every person has the responsibility, as we said, every person is the king in his home. What he does outside the house is going to have a certain effect. Over there, he's a passerby. What he does can be forgotten very easily. But the actions that a person does in his home, those have a long-lasting effect. Just as what a king does in his kingdom. That's why we say a person is like a king in his home. Everyone says, let's see what he does in his kingdom. And we'll do like that as well. This teaches us that peace that's found in a kingdom, it becomes a thing that has form, something that's existent. But if you don't have peace in the kingdom, then the kingdom loses form, loses existence. If a person can't control himself, how could he control over others? If a person can't control himself to bring peace into the house, then he also loses the respect that others would ordinarily give him. There was a kid, he wasn't a kid afterwards, I mean, a person who left Orthodoxy once wrote an essay about why he left. And he wrote that his father was a rabbi. Father was a rabbi when they started having electricity in the United States. And at the time that they started having electricity, so there was a great conflict among the rabbis whether one may turn on an electric light on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, or not. And the halacha that became accepted is that we may not turn on an electric light on Yom Tov. But this person's father obviously held with the opinion that said that one may, but because he saw so many rabbis disagreed, he preached to the congregants that one may not. And the kid says that every Yom Tov night, every Shabbos night, he'd want to listen to his father learn Torah, and no one else knew, he'd sneak down to the basement where his father was learning and sit next to him. And he says, I would notice him turn on the light and off the light. When he wanted to learn, he turned on. When he finished learning, he turned it off and then go to sleep. This man thought he was in the basement. No one saw. This is what he felt was the correct halacha. This is what he did. But someone saw. And it had such an impact on that someone that he left Orthodoxy. He said, came to the conclusion, he's a fake. Here he is preaching to his people, he can't do it. And in his own basement, he is doing it. So what good is all this learning? So the kid didn't know that there were two opinions in halacha and that his father felt that this is the correct opinion, but that's not what he could tell the people. But at the end of the day, this is the effect it had. Our children see who we are sometimes better than we see ourselves. And we sometimes have to think, how do our children view what we're doing? Sometimes the parents think, I taught my kids that the most important thing is Torah. I taught them the most important thing is good traits. And yet, you ask the kid, what's the most important thing? I'll tell you, money. And when the parent hears this, the parent is shocked. Why is money the most important thing? So the kid says, well, all I hear my parents talking about is money. Every time that if I, by mistake, turn on a light on Shabbos, they say, no, you shouldn't do that. If I break a chandelier, if I break a vase, listen to them get upset. What's more important to them? You see what's more important to them. Every time we discuss, they discuss, can we afford this? Can't we afford this? Parents sometimes feel like they have to give their children an understanding of the value of money, which is true. But we also have to remember that we have to leave things in perspective. And very often our children see things differently than we'd like them to see it. We have to see things from their perspective. And sometimes they see it more truthfully than we do. In the spirit of bridging the gap between our dating classes and our Binyan HaBayit class, I want to focus today on our second half, on the relationship with in-laws, which is, this is a tip that I give all the guys when they get engaged, This is something good for dating, and it's also good for marriage. We saw today in Shmuel that one should call one's in-laws dad, mom, father, mother. We're trying to build a relationship here, and it's very good if one calls one's in-laws mom and dad. It's very good, to help him and to help the relationship, to help him maintain perspective. As friendly as we are, I do owe them respect. And as far as the children goes, it's very good, because very often in homes where they do this, the children can grow up and not know who's whose parent. Meaning they grow up that both parents call both sets of grandparents mom and dad. And this gives them a very good confusion as to whose parent is this. And that, I say it's a good confusion because it shows that in front of the kids at least, and hopefully even not in front of the kids, the parents were able to speak nicely about both sets of grandparents. And very often that's not the case. Your mom said this. Your dad said this. What are you talking about my mom? You remember what your mom did? That's not what kids should be hearing. That's not the way conversations should go between spouses. If you keep speaking about both in-laws as mom and dad, so automatically it sounds differently than your mom. So that's why there's a gain on that level. The truth is that when we build a relationship with our in-laws, we should strive to build a very good relationship. And the relationship that one starts out with during the engagement period isn't always what one is constricted to throughout one's life. There have been many cases where one set of parents were totally against the couples getting married, and they gave a very cold shoulder throughout the engagement period, and afterwards they wanted to build a warm relationship, and one should always be open to that. One shouldn't gauge the relationship by what happened during the engagement period. That's a pressured period in life. And hopefully one can build the relationship beyond that. Sometimes during that period things go well, but don't be constricted to that period. Very often people feel like after what they did to me when we were engaged, we're never going to have a good relationship. And that's not fair. That's not the attitude we should have. The attitude we should have is that throughout our life we want to build the relationship with them. We're gaining a family, and we should always try to build the relationship with that family. There's a guy who, during the engagement, there were bitter arguments between his wife and his mother. And they wondered how they're going to work it out ultimately. So they decided to live in a different city. They lived here in Jerusalem. The in-laws lived way up north. So they figured that'll foster peace between them. And the relationship developed so beautifully that when this woman gave birth, she went to her mother-in-law to recuperate. She didn't go to her own mother. The relationship was so good between her and her mother-in-law by the time she had her first child that she didn't even go to her own mother. She went to her mother-in-law to recuperate because her mother was busy working. Her mother-in-law was already retired. So the relationship was so good that she preferred to be there. And that's an example of something which can happen. Now, we should always aspire to build the relationship, and there are a few tips that can help build the relationship between one and one's in-laws. We have to remember that as much as we want to build this relationship, the relationship with our parents is natural. Meaning, you could argue with your parents, you could fight, at the end of the day you're still their son. And regardless what happens, you'll still be their son. Your in-laws, it's not exactly that way. Rothschild once wrote, said, when we have arguments in business between me and my brothers, we're careful not to quote the arguments to our wives. Because after all the arguments end, he's still my brother. But to my wife, he's only her brother-in-law. So she remembers the argument and she bears the grudge. I don't bear the grudge. So I don't quote the arguments to my wife. Which is an important point to remember. Not every issue that we have with our family members should be quoted to our wives. Because as much as we want to develop the relationship between our wives and our family, they're still not blood relatives, and their relationship's going to be different. Well, in developing the relationship with our in-laws, so there are a few tips that can really help. Number one is anything positive that they say about the girl, your wife, quote to her. Make a concerted effort to quote to your wife the positive things they say about her. And the same in reverse. Anything positive that she says about them, quote to them. By doing that, you're fostering goodwill. And at the same time, filter out all the negative. If your mother said, ooh, your challah bakes a great cake, but you know she has no taste in clothing, so quote half the quote. Boy, my mom loves your cake. Okay, you don't have to quote the other half of the sentence. And the same thing in the reverse. If your wife says, you know, your mother dresses beautifully, but she doesn't know to bake for the life of her, so quote half the quote half of it. Quote the positive. If you quote the positive, you're fostering goodwill. Halakhically, you may not quote the negative. By the same token that we're forbidden to say lashon hara, to say anything that will cause harm, any bad quote to anyone else, we're also forbidden to quote that to our wives. So you're not allowed to quote to your wife what your parents said that might offend her, might hurt her feelings, and by the same token, you're not allowed to quote to your parents what she said negatively about them. But it's not enough not to quote the negative. If we want to develop the relationship, we have to make a concerted effort to quote the positive. And this goes both for the wife and the husband. I always tell couples when they get engaged that they should make a deal between them that they both understand that they will not quote the negative and they will try to quote the positive. And when one makes a concerted effort to do that, so one helps foster the goodwill both ways. It's for him to her parents and from her to his parents. Let's say there's an issue that has to be raised. So you have finals coming up. It's the last semester, and you have 3 weeks from now the finals, which will decide whether you're going to pass, get your degree or not. You come to her parents for Shabbos. They sit you down and they say, kids, we have a surprise for you. Next week we're going to Eilat. We got you a hotel room right next to us. You guys, you should come with us up to Eilat next week. So you're sitting there and you're asking yourself, are they nuts? Don't they not have an exam in 3 weeks? How could I go up to Eilat? I don't even have time to make the journey up to Eilat, let alone to sit there for 3 days. Who has time for this? So, if you're smart, stay quiet. Because like we just said, any issue that has to be raised, if you're going to raise it with them, as much as you want to develop the relationship, you're still not their son. So what I always recommend is wait till you're back in the room alone with your wife, with your challah, and then tell her, look, I think your parents are amazing. It's very nice that they thought of us and they went out and got us this hotel room, whatever it is. But, you know, practically this isn't really going to work. There's no way I could go. I need that time to study. And now comes the tricky part. If you could, it's always best that she should have a reason to tell her parents why she can't go. Because, firstly, it's best that she should tell them. They'll feel most comfortable talking to her, and they'll take it best if it comes from her. She knows how to talk to her parents, you know how to talk to your parents. But if she could find an excuse why it doesn't work for her, it's even better. Again, going along the same lines, along with the same concept. And the same thing is true in the reverse. If it's your parents, so it's best if you consult with him. All too often what happens is the couple goes to choose a hall. So his mother says, oh, I love this hall. And she says, well, I don't. That's not good. If she has something to say, she should pass it to her chassan. And he should say to his parents, he should figure out an excuse why it's not good for him. we're trying to ensure that we avoid situations where it's one pitted against one's in-laws. Do it through the spouse, do it wisely. And the spouse should also try to find an excuse why it's good or not good for them. This should be an agreement between the couple. Sometimes the parents sit you down and they say, now we want to hear what you have to say. And they sit you down and they ask you a question. So one thing you should know, and we've said this with regard to bargaining, you're always entitled to say, I need more time. And the same thing is true when they sit you down. The nice thing to say is, thank you very much, we heard it, we'll discuss it, and we'll get back to you. All too often they expect you to have the discussion in front of them. And then they want to have a part in the discussion. And the trick is not to fall into that. To say, guys, I hear, you guys got a good point, We'll talk about it and we'll get back to you. What do you gain by that? That the couple should always try to come as a unified front. You should always be discussing what do we want. The fact that me and my wife, me and my Kala might have different wishes, so we'll discuss that between ourselves. And then we'll decide between ourselves what we want. But when we speak to someone else, it should be represented as, this is what we want. And this is especially true with regard to in-laws. of course, if you have to say something positive. It sounds very nice, sounds very good. We'll have to discuss it. Sounds good. You're always entitled to take time. Gentlemen, any questions still here?
Sorry.
No problem. Okay, I think we'll call it a night.
No, I'm just having